freaking out of!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more scream.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Down at Safeco Field this morning to talk to Scott Service here at 9:30. No Brock today. He is busy doing some college football learning, I guess. He has to learn about it. I don't know what he's doing. He's not here. He's in Bristol. Bob Stelton is in. Good morning, sir.
Hi.
It's good to have you here.
How's it going?
That was a great warm-up you had there and all that.
Get the pipes going.
Get to those deep low registers. I like that.
They're really low.
That's why we have Bob in here to make me sound bad. Anyway, like I need a lot of help.
Hey, they screwed up the sign out here.
What do you mean?
Shouldn't it say "Welcome Bob and Salk" or "Salk and Bob"?
Well, I don't think we're changing the name of the show
for a day.
I mean,
it's just common courtesy.
What do you think? There was a very nice job. The Mariners were very nice. They put "Welcome Brock and Salk" up there on the gigantic
giant scoreboard.
It's called Mariners Vision, folks.
Mariners Vision. Thank you. It's not a jumbotron. It's Mariners Vision, and I don't. I guess they could have put Bob on there, but Brock. You know, Brock's kind of the name brand around here.
He really is.
You're lucky it doesn't say Brock, Bob, and Salk, even though Brock's not here. Like,
or just Brock and the other guy. Right. Welcome.
His presence looms over all of us. We will talk a lot of baseball today. We'll get to that in a few. Lousy loss last night and whatever. But Doug Baldwin, man, I missed this yesterday as I was running around and doing things and in meetings and this and that. And all of a sudden, kind of started looking through, I think it was your show note. And I was like, hey, wait a minute. What do you mean Doug Baldwin? What is this? What do you mean Doug Baldwin's hurt? And so started like scrambling through, Googling Doug Baldwin injury, like 3 weeks with a knee. That is no bueno, man. And I'm not going to tell you it's the end of the world if it's only 3 weeks and he's back for the regular season. Obviously, you know, no injury that takes place in the preseason only is a season killer or even something that you become too concerned about. But it sure does point out how thin they are at that position. And if this is something that continues to bleed into the season, that's actually a really major deal.
It is definitely a major deal. And what was worrying me, initially I was going, all right, listen, they know what Doug brings to the table. He's not trying to vie for a spot on the roster. It's not about him developing a rhythm with Russell. All that's fine. But you know, I started hearing the guys around there talking about how you parse Pete. And when he's generally extremely vague is when things are a little more serious.
I would think that's true.
And he was incredibly vague
with
this.
Well, let's play. This was Pete Carroll yesterday, asked about Doug Baldwin's absence and what was going on with his knee. Here's what he said.
You know, we're going to give him a couple weeks here before we bring him back out to make sure that we ramped him back up properly. We came into camp a little bit off and just want to make sure that we take care of him. You know, we know exactly what's going on and he's doing some special treatments to make sure that we're taking care of him. And we want to bring him back into shape so we can really get ready for the long haul.
So he came into camp with it. So something that was pre-existing, if you will. Now, I saw him walking around yesterday. He's not limping. There's no brace. I didn't see anything like that. That made me feel a little better. But just, you know, with all the veteran reporters out there that talk to Pete every day talking about, man, he was really vague. And when he's that vague, it tends to be serious. I'm like, don't do that. Don't plant that seed with me.
But if he is walking around, no limp, no nothing, I mean, it can only be so serious, right?
I mean, I would think, yeah. I didn't. That's why the news was so surprising, because I had just seen him walking around.
Yeah.
So, again, I didn't see a brace. I didn't see any kind of, you know, wrap or anything on a knee. He was just walking around, pair of shorts.
He's definitely vague. Oh, yeah, no, we got this under control. We know all about it.
We know exactly what it is.
All right, well, then what is it? And could we know about it? And could you prove to us that it's only going to be a couple of weeks? Because Doug Baldwin's a pretty important part of what we're trying to do here. I don't know. I just think it's funny. You kind of take it for granted that Doug is going to be there because he's always been there.
Yep.
He has been as steady a presence on this team.
Durable.
As there's, I mean, other than Russell, who's played in every single game and even played through the ridiculous injuries a couple of years ago, Doug is just, you just expect him out. Of course Doug's going to play.
He's been tough since day one. He got his teeth knocked out. Remember that?
No.
You don't remember him getting his teeth knocked out in
Maybe.
The end zone?
Dude, I don't remember anything. I kind of remember that.
I don't remember anything.
I don't. My memory's awful. Did the Seahawks end up winning a Super Bowl or not?
Yeah, they did. Remember. They did. It happened a few years. There was I believe it was in Arizona, and the texters will remind us all, but he went up for a grab in the end zone, and just got plowed and knocked out his front teeth.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and he didn't miss any time.
No, he's a tough dude. So you just come to expect it, and then all of a sudden you take him out of that wide receiver spot, and that position group looks thin. And it's just amazing. Whenever you have a position group that's thin, you always seem to get an injury or two there.
Of course.
What are the two position groups on paper that are thinnest for the Seahawks right now?
Defensive line.
And specifically D end.
Yeah.
And wide receiver.
Yep.
And who's hurt?
Deion Jordan.
and Doug Baldwin.
Deion Jordan. How much were they truly counting on him being available? Talking about Deion Jordan.
Yeah.
For 16 games this year.
Well, they've built their roster as if they are counting on that. They don't have extra defensive ends. And I don't think they meant to do it this way. I don't think it was by choice. But they have built their roster with the expectation almost that Deion Jordan is going to be healthy. And he's a guy who has never been healthy in his career, et cetera.
So that would be a big mistake on their part. That's a massive miscalculation with a guy who's had an injury history.
Yeah,
to say all of a sudden he's going to be more durable this year, so we needn't plan past his presence.
I don't think that it was their desire to build it that way. I don't think that they saw anybody out there that was worth their time and money. I don't think there was an option for them with somebody that they thought they could bring in who could do that job. So I don't think, you know, they drafted a couple of guys. They have Frank Martin working there. They brought in, you know, Brandon Jackson, some of these guys last year that they think can play, excuse me, some of that role. But I don't think it was on purpose. I don't think they wanted
Frank Martin,
to
like Frank Clark
way.
Meets Jacob Martin.
Jacob Martin, sorry. That's
Frank Martin? I like it.
Frank Martin.
We're doing like the Bobby Wagner thing, remember?
He's a basketball coach.
Was that Kendrick her nice Thomas. Way of correcting you?
Yes, isn't Lydia nice?
That's a very polite way of correcting him. I like that.
With other people, she's even more polite, or she just lets it go. With me, she corrects. She's like the text
Love
toy
you, Saul.
With me. Thanks, Lydia. Frank Martin's, isn't Frank Martin the coach?
Frank Martin is also the transporter. I'm pretty sure like that's
the
Frank
transporter.
Yeah, like Jason Statham's character.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
I'm
Jason
familiar
Statham
with the movie, but I didn't know the character's name.
That's impressive that you know that guy's name. I know Jason Bourne. Like, I know that guy's name. There's a whole bunch of movies about him. Anyway, does this make Brandon Marshall more important and valuable?
It certainly gives him a better opportunity to dazzle, right? You'd think those reps are going to go somewhere in practice and in preseason, because I don't expect to see Doug maybe till the third game of the preseason.
Yeah.
If.
Yeah, well, which is so good, by the way. I mean, if Brandon Marshall gets more time in the preseason, I'd actually like to see him. You see him out of practice.
He's a big dude.
Dude, he stands out.
He's a big guy, but he's still not quite healthy.
I know,
he's had ankle surgeries.
And he stands. When you're looking at all the wide receivers, and they all look basically the same, right? I mean, Keenan Reynolds looks like Doug.
Right.
They call him, you know, young Doug and old Doug. Mm-hmm. I mean, Keenan Reynolds looks just like Doug. He's the kid who played quarterback at, what, Navy or whatever? And now he's converting to wide receiver. The other receivers all look exactly alike. Darbo and Moore and the rest of them.
I think Moore's got an injury he's dealing with, too.
They all look basically the same. They're the same height, the same weight. They run about the same.
They're all injured.
You got Tanner McAvoy, who stands out for being tall, whatever, and he's not going to make the team in all likelihood. And then there's this freak show in Brandon Marshall. You're like, whoa! Who's that guy?
He's the guy they've been wanting to have as a piece on this roster for years. The big receiver, right? Just the big target that can hang onto the ball and provide that security in the red zone. And you had a version of it in Jimmy Graham. You don't have it anymore. They tried it with Sidney Rice. They tried it with different receivers throughout the years, and nobody's
tried
ever really stuck.
With T.O. They tried it with Mike Williams.
Braylon Edwards.
Geez, all the names that they've brought in to try that role. And unfortunately, they eventually had to go to tight end to do it with Jimmy Graham.
Yeah.
And that's when you lose your identity. That's when you stop being a physical football team. You want to put that guy on the outside as a receiver who's tall and catches the ball in the red zone? Great. That is indicative of the type of team you want to be. But the moment you make that guy the tight end, yeah, now all of a sudden you've lost something that you're supposed to have and part of your identity. It's why I'm you know, I know I've heard you say a bunch of times that you think this is a double-digit win team.
Yes.
You know, injuries to guys like Doug Baldwin and Deion Jordan, et cetera,
that could change my prediction.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to really threaten that prediction. But when you are back to who you're supposed to be, I could absolutely see them winning 10 games if Will Disley and Vinette and Dixon are blocking the way they're supposed to, and you become the kind of physical run-first football team you want to be.
Yeah, I think the offense is going to fill in. They're going to pick up some of the slack of the defense if there's a massive drop off, which I don't. I think people are overestimating the drop off that we're going to experience, right? Because you played a majority of the season without Cliff Avril and without Cam Chancellor and without Richard Sherman. You've seen what this team looks like without Michael Bennett before. I think this is a team that's
it's just
got
all of them at once, though.
It is, but you kind of had you were without two of them last year,
and those guys have gotten older and haven't been the same player recently. So I tend to agree.
Actually,
with you,
without three of them last year,
but you start removing key pieces and veterans like Doug Baldwin and Deion Jordan, and all of a sudden, I think maybe that number becomes in question. 710. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, the Astros may have been limping, but Mariners couldn't get past them last night. 5-2, your final, despite no Correa, no Altuve, Springer injured early. Mariners are going to have to take the series this afternoon. That's why we're down at Safeco Field. Wade LeBlanc on the hill against Dallas Keuchel. First pitch, 1:10. Pregame show will start at noon here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Not a great debut for two of the new relievers here. First, Tui Villala was just okay. Got himself out of trouble with the ground ball, but really didn't look all that dominant. And then Zach Duke gave up his first home run to a lefty in like 30 years, and that ball was destroyed. Oh, my God. Ends up making it a 5-2 game. The Mariners finished July, Bob, with the lowest run scored in baseball. The lowest run scored per game in baseball in the month of July. They are simply not hitting. They're reminiscent of one of those Lloyd McClendon or Eric Wedge teams. It's bizarre. This is a team designed to score runs and see what happens with the pitching, and instead, it's really been exactly the opposite. I'm thinking about bringing out the just hit. Just hit! Just hit the ball!
Offense is flat.
Than two runs.
They're flat. What can you say? I mean, you've got guys who are starting to pick it up, and Nelson Cruz, and you saw Zunino the other night, and Haniger with an RBI last night, but they can't get any rhythm going. They cannot find a rhythm where they get at least half of this lineup clicking at the same time. You're counting on big nights from guys like Ryan Healy driving in six or whatever when the rest of the lineup is flat, so they need to figure out a way to jumpstart. I don't know if Cameron Maben's going to be a guy that gives you a spark, but they've got to figure out something offensively to back the play of your pitchers out here.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, rough news at Seahawks practice yesterday as Pete Carroll announced that Doug Baldwin's going to be out for a little while. 3 weeks is the supposition with a sore knee. Pete called it a little bit of a problem. Yeah, I would say right now it's just a little bit of a problem, but it points out some holes, right? As you look at where this team and how it's constructed, Doug is one of those things you just consider to be there because he's always there. It's like a chair in your house. Like, of course the chair is there. Where else would that couch be your chair? It's just always in the same place. Doug always plays wide receiver. And you remember that Doug's getting up there in years. And he's he's one of the older veterans on this team. And eventually injuries and Father Time take all of us. I'm not suggesting that Doug Baldwin is done. Far from it. But as you get older, the injury risks increase. Mm-hmm. And without him in that wide receiver room, all of a sudden it goes from a position where you feel very comfortable to one where maybe it's a little thin. So Brandon Marshall, the only other real veteran there other than Tyler Lockett, yeah, I think you'd like to see him step up. You'd like to know that Jerron Brown is having a good camp, and so far I haven't really heard that. Or you better see some of the leap made by the Amara Darbos of David Moores of the world to really make that position group competitive.
Well, it's a massive opportunity to take Pete's angle on this about how positive it is. It is a great opportunity for Darbo. It is a great opportunity for Moore and McAvoy and any of these other guys that are fighting for a spot because you don't have Jimmy Graham taking reps out there and you're not going to have Doug Baldwin out there taking reps. Those were your two main targets last year. So you've got this entire preseason, essentially, to work those guys in and get a better look than you probably ever would have if Doug were here and if you had somebody like Jimmy Graham here. So this is a huge opportunity for these guys to show what they're made of.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Trade deadline ended yesterday at 1 o'clock. Jerry DePoto was pretty busy right near the end, so made a whole bunch of moves just in the last week. Adds three guys in his bullpen, plus Cameron Maben. Let's run through them. Zach Duke is the lefty specialist, though he unfortunately was not great against lefties last night. Sam Tuivalala pitched last night. He's a right-hander, and then right-hander Adam Warren comes over from the Yankees of the three. I think Warren is probably the name that will help them most this season. The other addition yesterday is is outfielder Cameron Maben. He was a really big prospect early in his career. In fact, he was the centerpiece of the deal that sent Miguel Cabrera from the Marlins to the Tigers. He has never materialized as that kind of player. Now 31 years old, he's been in the league for quite some time. He's got some speed. He can run around and catch the ball in center field, but the on-base percentage and hitting has never lived up to what it was supposed to be. However, veteran presence that I think at this point is probably an upgrade over Guillermo Heredia.
Well, and Heredia is a fantastic defender. I don't have any issues with that, but he's a black hole at the plate. I mean, it just you look at it and you feel like there's an out, with all due respect to him. And Maven is not great. He's a 250 hitter. But that is a step up from what you're getting out of Heredia. Perhaps he can provide a spark. He does have speed, as you said. He can get on base, steal some bases. But is it a massive upgrade? No. Is it going to be enough of a boost with this lineup to get something going? Perhaps, because right now you're getting nothing offensively out of Heredia for the most part.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know. I think you'd probably call them a complimentary piece, and that's really what they added. Look, they weren't going to be in the mix for big-time impact bats or arms. They don't have those prospects, and this is what happens when year after year you say, no, we're not going to rebuild. No, we're going to stay.
You hate that they didn't commit to rebuilding.
Yeah, because you didn't have the prospects to make big deals. Yeah. And if you wanted one of those big-name players, and not even the biggest of names, Tommy Pham is a good example, right? That's the kid in St. Louis.
Yep.
If you wanted a center fielder like Pham, who would have been an upgrade in center field and controllable for the next 2 years, you needed prospects to do it. You don't have them. Tampa does, because Tampa has found ways to rebuild in years when they're not that good. They trade away their good pieces and move on. The Mariners haven't done that, and eventually you pay the piper on those decisions down the road. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How are we doing this morning?
I'm doing well.
What do we make of this Doug Baldwin injury? That kind of took me by surprise yesterday. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it went all the way back toward the end of the mini camp or something like that, but I wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, it's going to be a couple weeks. It's just rest. And I think that, you know, he's now, 29 years old, and he's starting to get into that age group where, you know how to take care of yourself. Just be easy on it. I'd be more worried about the Deion Jordan one.
Well, I am. I'm already worried about the Deion Jordan one because of his injury history. And I guess the only thing that worries me about Doug, it's not him specifically. It's just the position group. And when you start watching this team practice with no Deion Jordan and oftentimes no Frank Clark, and then on the other side of the ball, no Doug Baldwin, it really points out two position groups that are important that are awfully thin after their starters.
No doubt. But again, because it's, you know, you've got, 5 weeks or so before, 6 weeks before the start of the regular season, it's like it's just a matter of getting that group in there. Because again, they have so many young guys and fast guys that they're trying to at least audition. And that's what, I mean, you wonder how much Doug Baldwin was going to play in the preseason anyways. I mean, he's got a good working relationship with Russell Wilson, so you know that works out well. So I wouldn't worry about the Doug Baldwin one. But again, Deion Jordan, I got to be concerned about that.
How well do you think they plan for their defensive line? And talking about defensive ends in particular, if you're relying on Deion Jordan, a guy with an injury history, to be there for 16 games, all of a sudden you expect him to become more durable. What does that say about how they planned that position group?
Well, they planned it so that, they got a fast group, too, kind of like the wide receivers, and they got numbers, but now the question is going to be, is there going to be enough quality? I mean, you still have Barkevius Mingo. He was kind of filling in there. Rasheem Green, who at least is starting to come on now that his knee's a little bit better. It's certainly thin, and of course, you got Frank Clark really not doing a lot of things at the moment, and so it's no different than, I guess, the minicamp, but I guess the difference now is we're getting closer to the season, and they really need to see these guys, and you don't know, how much Deion Jordan's going to be able to play. And I don't know which guy they would take to be the next guy up.
Yeah. Have you started looking at available extra pieces around the league at those two spots, either defensive end or wide receiver, either guys that are available now or players that are at risk of being cut because of their salaries that might have some value?
Yeah, I was a little surprised that they didn't go after Connor Barwin. He signed with the New York Giants for 2 years, 3.5, 31-year-old pass rusher. I mean, I thought that might have been, and you still have Elvis Dumervil out there. As far as cuts right now, too early to make a call on those. But, they've got to be looking because, again, they've got somebody that can kind of anchor down there if they don't have Deion Jordan and maybe fill in. But John Snyder's going to be looking.
How about wide receiver? I mean, you know, we're sort of hoping that Brandon Marshall's going to be able to do it. I know there's a very loud wide receiver who's out there and available, and Dez Bryant, if you're interested.
I don't think you do that
taking
one.
No, that chance. I don't see that happening. But are there other names of guys that maybe we've heard of that might just at least bring some stability there?
Not a lot. I mean, it's because I still think, I mean, you just saw a couple guys sign with the New Orleans Saints, but I don't think they would help anyways. I mean, Eric Decker is more of a slot guy than he is anything else, so that may not be the case. I mean, they need more of an outside guy, but again, I think that they have enough options right now that they need to see these guys play in the preseason to see what they really have, as opposed to right now trying to panic and try to get somebody else.
This is a massive opportunity, though, right? Because you've got two guys who were here last year that consume so much on that side of the ball in the passing game with Jimmy Graham and Doug Baldwin. Neither are there currently. Obviously, Jimmy's not here at all. But you'd think Darbo and Marshall and Jerron Brown, all of these guys have got to be looking at this as, man, this is, you know, you don't want to see your guys go down. But a great opportunity, especially for the young guys, to prove themselves.
Oh, no doubt. And Darbo, I think, had a good day yesterday, so he started to come on at the right time. And you know that David Moore has really been one of the surprise stars, I guess, of and making a big move there. I know Jerron Brown is a guy that just talked to, and you know he offers some pretty good things because he's a big, tall wide receiver. So, you know, again, they've got to see what these guys are, because remember, they haven't seen, I mean, there's so many new guys here that they just don't have a real glance at them. We see them in practice, but now we got to see them in games.
Any other big news around the league we should be focused on today?
See, I think that, you know, still the injury bug. I mean, you know, Jake Ryan, I think, probably has an ACL for the Green Bay Packers. That's not good.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I saw somebody, speaking of the Packers, sorry to cut you off, I saw somebody mention that maybe there would be a fit for Earl Thomas in Green Bay.
I don't see that. I mean, what, they have Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix, and they've been drafting safeties and defensive backs like crazy the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I don't really see that kind of fit, and I don't know if they can fit in that kind of a big salary.
Do you have any different sense of how this thing's going to play out? Anything that's been said recently that's changed?
Nope. Looks like it's just going to be on hold because you know they're not going to make any kind of a trade unless they get a good offer, and they'll wait it out. I mean, you know, they get money back because they'll, and I'm sure that the way this is being handled by Earl, they're not going to be reluctant to waive the fines. And so I think this now all the way goes through the preseason, and you know, once we get to the 15-day mark, I mean, he loses $475,000 of prorated money. It's $40,000 a day. That doesn't go to the team. It's still just going to be a fine. But in the end, I mean, Earl's the one losing on this one.
Are you buying Tedrick Thompson? Everybody and their mother has mentioned Tedrick Thompson as being the breakout star of camp. Are you buying it?
So far from what I've seen, yeah. I mean, I'm not ready to proclaim him the star yet, but boy, he showed things that we haven't had a chance to see. He has good range. He has good playmaking ability. He's a big safety, and you know, he's going to be encouraging to see. Now, again, that's in practice. We'll see how he does in games, but no, these last couple of days, he's looked really good. But also what's interesting, too, is Maurice Alexander is getting more time to play, too. You know, it's Tedrick Thompson. Was not first team yesterday. Maurice Alexander, a strong safety, was actually there the last couple days.
What is going on with Delano Hill? Like, this is a guy that they drafted in the third round and in Michigan, all that. Like, I don't know, that disappoints me.
Well, no, remember, they're rotating him. They're kind of going one day,
yeah,
it's going to be Hill.
I haven't heard anything about him. Like, I would like to be hearing that Delano Hill is out there crushing
it's
people.
Five. They've had five practices. Well,
they only get 10 before they start playing games. It's not like they have a 2-month-long training camp.
This is warm-up time. He'll be fine.
Let's do the wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
If you could either have your hair perfectly groomed every morning the minute you wake up, or have your perspiration smell like baked cookies, which would you choose?
Is there like a choice on this one?
That's
like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you want your like baked cookies?
Yeah, so
I
when
mean,
you sweat,
you
don't want to
smell like baked cookies.
Or you can just wake up and your hair looks perfect all day long.
I would like the perfect hair. I mean, I don't have much of it, but I'd like to have the perfect hair. And then the great part is I don't have to comb it or anything like that. I mean, first off, you want me to break up in a big sweat and all that stuff? It's like, ugh. Kind of terrible.
A baked cookie sweat.
Yeah,
Howdy,
baked
that's
cookie
a terrible
sweat.
Question because the, well,
there's no choice
downside
in it.
To having your hair look good, and why would what's the upside of smelling like baked cookies all
that
the time?
That when you work out really hard, you don't smell disgusting.
No, the question would be, would you rather have your hair perfectly coiffed in the morning without having to work, or not have to like put on deodorant or something like that?
Yeah, boring. Howdy, what's wrong with you, man?
That's
boring.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, can you imagine that? So, I mean, you're outside and you're trying to run with that baked cookie, and all of a sudden the bees start attacking you.
The bees? I hadn't even considered the bees.
Great point.
Gotta consider the bees.
That's
You always do?
Always no do. Choice.
John, thank you. Goodbye. Right. I'm sorry about that. That's terrible. How do you do better? Come on.
You guys
How do you
no
not take the bees into account?
Come on. Seriously. Now you have Clayton out there attracting a swarm of bees everywhere
Great.
He goes.
Now we got bees to deal with.
This is terrible.
And you'll run.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, no Bs, maybe some B-level players. That's what Jerry DePoto brought in yesterday. Are any of them A's? Let's discuss next. I'm Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Hello, hello.
All right, Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN, Seattle, 710sports.com. Bob Stelton is in for Brock today, which is great. Having Bob in, talk a little baseball after a trade deadline that went down yesterday and a tough loss by the Mariners. We do have a lot of comments, by the way, Bob, of people who have some thoughts on having your sweat smell like cookies all the time, unsurprisingly.
Are they in favor or opposed?
Well, it depends. People are worried that I would have a uni-pit cookie sweat, which is a problem, because I only really... My left side doesn't really sweat, just my right side does.
Uni-pit.
Well, only my right armpit sweats. My left armpit doesn't really sweat. I don't know why. So, like, if it's super hot, I'll be drenched in sweat on
it's
the
all
right side.
It's all drenched.
Sweating again, too. Ugh.
No.
I'm so side. Sweaty right now.
That's me.
That's just who you
but
are.
Not
huh?
on the left side ever, for whatever reason. Another texter says, forget the bees. If you smelled like baked cookies, you'd have starving CrossFitters trying to lick your armpits whenever you worked out at the gym.
That visual is just filth.
No.
Just
filth. That wouldn't be paleo. Come on.
Starving.
There's too much salt. Too much salt in that. Yeah, that's disgusting.
Just gross. All right, deadline passes yesterday, the trade deadline. Mariners made essentially four moves plus Colomé and Span earlier. So all in all, their in-season haul includes four relievers and two outfielders. I'm not going to include Roenis Elias for now. Maybe we could. But is it enough essentially becomes the question. Is it enough? Did Jerry DePoto do enough?
I really, really wanted to see them get a starter. I'm not talking about, you know, it'd be great if you could get DeGrom, something like that, but that was never the expectation. I thought they would be able to get somebody in there just for insurance purposes. You're not deep. You don't have options. We keep talking about Felix Hernandez, and what do you do if he goes out there and stinks it up again? What are your options? Well, you're hoping Erasmo's healthy. I know he's going through rehab assignments now, but you're hoping he's going to show up and be immediately productive to an extent, or... You go with Elias for a few innings to start a game. You start working the bullpen. You don't have any realistic options at this point. You don't have any depth. So even if Felix pulls it together a bit, you gotta have. You were talking about going to a six-man rotation to save the wear and tear on Marco Gonzalez and James Paxton, guys right. who are going to achieve career highs in innings. To me, you don't really have that luxury. Who you can bring up Christian Bergman? I mean, what are your options?
I mean, first of all, maybe. Christian Bergman's actually pitched pretty well the two times he's been up. But
the last time, not great.
But was in Colorado. We'll put that aside. I still think they're going to get a starting pitcher. I mean, my belief is that the market for starting pitchers for yesterday was really high. Not a lot of them changed hands at all, and I think the reason is that all of the sellers were holding those names up really high and trying to get back big-time returns. Mariners don't have that.
Right.
I do think that in the next month, and it's complicated, obviously, to get into what it means to be dealt after August 1st, but if what you need here is a starting pitcher, this is how they got Mike Leake last year.
Yeah, on the waiver deadline.
Get somebody after the waiver deadline, and you might just be able to pluck somebody who a team is just not interested in paying anymore. Mm-hmm. If what you're after is league average depth and you're not looking for a top of the line guy, I think that may actually be available here in the next couple of weeks.
Hoping it is because
I think it will be.
You have to admit that you look at that as a pressing need.
Of course.
Even if Felix is five innings, three runs, he's keeping you in games. He's not electric by any stretch, but keeping you in games. You still need some level of depth if you're talking about a six-man rotation.
Agreed.
Or you're going to be able to absorb any sort of injury to any of those guys.
You don't have
the logical answer
right
now.
No matter how many starting pitchers you have, if you're a contending team at the deadline, you want to get another one.
Right.
I don't care if you have eight. You want to get nine. That's the way it goes at the deadline.
Well, that's what they always say. You can never have too much pitching.
Of course
which
not.
Is a cliche, but it's true.
Well, and especially with starting pitching. It wasn't available. So in that case, Jerry DePoto looks at what he's got, looks at his hand, and tries to maximize, I think, what he's got. And they didn't get any A-level names, as we were just saying. I will say this. If you look at the deadline as a longer period of time, getting Alex Colomé is an A. That's an A trade.
Yes.
Was there a reliever who changed hands in the last week better than Alex Colomé?
Zach Britton. Is he better?
Maybe. I mean, not this year. Obviously, if you look at the entire history for Britton, yes. Coming back from injury, all right, maybe one. And the price on Britain was enormous,
right,
comparatively.
No, Colomé was fantastic, and that the side effect, or I guess the gravy on top of that, was Denard Span, who, for whatever really reason, good, has turned it on since he's been here. He's the guy who was hitting .238 when the trade was made. He's been hitting .300 with the Mariners and playing a decent. I don't think he's a brilliant outfielder.
Good enough for the most part.
He's decent.
Yeah,
he's
he saved you a game the other day with a catch, but you're right. Overall,
he's brought something to the table that I don't know they expected offensively.
I guess if I'm Jerry DePoto, I would say, look, if I have to defend my record, not that he does, but if I were defending what I did yesterday, I would say, look, my biggest acquisition was made early. Okay, fine. It didn't happen this week, but it's allowed us to be in this spot. And by the way, I got more value out of those players because I got an extra 6 weeks out of them,
right,
instead of only getting them for 2 weeks. I got the best reliever available. And then when I didn't see any A names that were in my price range, I acquired a bunch of B-level talent. And my hope is that they help rest the A-level guys that I've already got. That if I can't acquire new A players, let me get B players who can hold down the fort, mm-hmm, rest some of the great players I have so that they can remain or even get back to being A players down the stretch. That's a successful deadline to me. But you're right. They don't get a starting pitcher.
To me, it was more about what they didn't get
and
as opposed to what they did.
Bat.
Yeah, I what they got is sort of what I expected. We had talked a lot about this before it started. And I kept saying, I don't expect to have names that everybody knows. I mean, yeah, you've heard of Cameron Maybin, you've heard of Zach Duke, but I'm talking like star value. I wasn't expecting anything like that, and he kind of did what I thought. You know, B-level guys, yeah, guys that you just kind of pluck off another roster, and they end up showing well in this system here for whatever reason. My issue was more about what they didn't get, and that was a starting pitcher. And like you said, chances are they're going to pick somebody up in the waiver deadline.
Yeah, and I think you would have liked to have seen a more impactful bat in center field,
yeah,
based on the fact that you're hitting 2.5 runs a game or something here in July. Sorry about that. That was distracting. Based on that fact, you would have liked more of an impact bat. It wasn't available. Who was out there that was going to impact your
Why
lineup?
Didn't they get Bryce Harper?
Yeah, well, they didn't have the opportunity on that one. The big name was Adam Jones. That was sort of the one fit that would have been an upgrade in center field, obviously a familiar name. And for whatever reason, he didn't want to go anymore. I'll read you his quote. What do you make of this quote from Adam Jones? Because I was surprised by it. Here's what he said on not wanting to be traded. When players walked out years ago and walked the picket lines and did all that stuff, they did all that for reasons like right now. I earned this, and it's my decision. I don't have to explain it to nobody. It's my decision. Thank you. And by all accounts, because I read Roach Kubota, who's the writer there in Baltimore, he said he wasn't mean about it. He wasn't rude. He wasn't defiant.
Just matter of fact.
Yeah, just like, hey, look, I don't have to defend this.
Yeah.
This is my right as a 10-5 guy. This is what the people before me did. I don't feel like leaving.
I don't have a problem with it.
I have a problem with it. Just really, you don't feel like getting out of Baltimore and giving another team a shot in the arm?
Well,
your team stinks, and you're a free agent at the end of the year. You want to ride this out? Why?
But at some point, you get criticized either way. If you jump to a situation that's competitive, it's like
being traded to a situation that's competitive.
Well, he's allowing it.
And
he's got the say so.
But it's not like calling up your buddies and saying, "Hey, we got next in the NBA." I mean, it's different from that. You're being traded in baseball.
But remember what Jeff Passan said yesterday about him just being like such a thoughtful guy. I mean,
yeah,
his family is there. He probably just doesn't want to. He's a veteran. He doesn't want to uproot his family. We also kind of downplay that for these guys. I mean, they have to change their entire lives on a dime.
I downplay it all the time. I absolutely do because I don't really care.
Well,
and it's not, Lydia, you're right. Like, as a human being, if I were GM, I would. But I don't care about Adam Jones, the person, that much. I want a center fielder who can hit here in Seattle. And if he doesn't want to be here, I don't want him. I mean, like, if his mentality is,
right,
yeah, I don't really care about going to a contending team. I'm happy here in Baltimore. Cool. You're not for me then.
But then that's also a move that would be praised by some people as showing loyalty, that you didn't bail when things got tough and ugly. You were sticking it out and there for the rebuild, whatever.
But if he had 3 more years on his deal, I'd say absolutely. He doesn't. This is it. I mean, he's not going to be there for the rebuild unless he signs a new contract. He's got 2 months left on a deal where his team's going to win 40 games.
Well, that's going to be the interesting part, is to see what happens after the season as a free agent. Does he go elsewhere? Because then I would question. Then I would say, well, wait a minute. You were, you know, the stand-up guy showing some loyalty to this organization when you had the opportunity to leave in a trade.
Yeah.
But now you leave a month and a half later because...
Well, he's probably going to because, you know, well, someone's going to...
What if he resigns in Baltimore?
All right, fine. But he could have done that anyway. And, yeah. And if he were to then resign in Baltimore, his team would be better next year because of the prospects they would have received for the trade. So, I don't know, whatever. It's not a big deal. It just sort of surprised me to see something like that. The reality is, though, you know, after years of trying to compete, they don't have the major prospects to give up for some of the big names out there. And some of that is on Jack Z and some of it's on Jerry DePoto for what he's built here in the last couple of years. But when you never make an attempt, like, this is why Houston can always trade for another player.
Yep.
This is why Tampa can always deal for someone else. They've got the resources available if they want them, and the Mariners just don't.
You don't currently. I mean, you've got Kyle Lewis, which I know you don't want to part with. You've got Evan White. You've got other guys that have some sort of value. But you traded a guy in Tyler O'Neill. That's turned out to be a fantastic trade for Marco Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And at the time, people are going, what are you doing?
Sure.
What are you doing? We don't have that much talent in the system. Why would you get rid of a guy as highly touted as him? And look how well that's turned out.
They found a way to fix Marco, man. It is truly
unbelievable.
Of all the things that I know that the Segura-Haniger deal gets all the credit, and for good reason.
As it should.
But this one's
creeping up the charts.
The process on Marco in that it's not just that they found a way to trade for him; it's that they fixed him once they got here.
Rushed back from Tommy John surgery. Like, they didn't entirely fix him; he just was rushed back too soon.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yes, he wasn't able to throw his cutter last year. But when you hear them talk about the things they did, I mean, they stopped throwing a four seamer. They added this other pitch. I mean, they've done some things that have changed his repertoire. And I think they deserve a ton of credit for that. That's everything that Jack Zarensic didn't do. Even when he drafted well, Jack didn't develop well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the cool things that Jerry has been able to do.
Well, and Jerry's also got some vision. I think he's got some vision looking at somebody like a Wade LeBlanc or looking at somebody like Marco Gonzalez. Sure. And understanding, you know, and I know who they are now and what they look like now. But I he's got the ability to sort of visualize what they're capable of. Doesn't mean they always live up to it, but in these two instances, he's absolutely nailed it.
All right, you guys can always jump in on this. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Phone lines 206-421-3776 throughout the day. We're going to get you on the horn here in 20 minutes with a series of questions that you won't know ahead of time. It's like a test. You don't get to know the answers or the questions ahead of time. You got to actually answer them on your feet. We got that going on here in 20 minutes. Right after Coors Light's Blue 42 and some surprises on special teams. I think you may see a player or two that you're not expecting in odd spots. Find out who and how next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, time for a little Coors Light Blue 42. We're down at Safeco Field today. Bob Stelton in for Brock. Scott Serve is going to join us at 9:30. With no Brock in today, we're going to turn to Brady Henderson, our buddy, former employee here at 710, but of course now working for ESPN.com, covering the Seahawks. He joins us on the Venue Kings hotline. I still think we can talk to Brady, although I'm a little ashamed ever since he was part of our four-person scramble that shot even par. I mean, it's really awful. That should never happen.
That's bad. You should have been better.
As four people all taking the same, like, yeah. And Brady was supposed
you
to be our best.
You blame Brady?
Guy. Well, he's our best golfer.
He's your ringer.
Yeah, and he was terrible. Brady, what happened
to
him?
He was terrible. Wow. That,
it's the worst I've ever seen you play.
Yeah, that was with a double bogey on a par three, which is just shameful. As Brock Heward keeps reminding me every time I see him, he looked at me like I committed a crime whenever he sees me.
Yeah, we blame you.
You're
that.
The ringer. You're supposed to go out there and just crush it, Brady. Yeah.
I definitely played poorly that day. Yeah, that's very true.
All right, let's go. Let's see if you're better at answering football questions than golfing at Broadmoor. Let's see. Question number one. If Doug Baldwin's going to be out for a significant amount of time here, Brady, and it looks like it's only going to be a few weeks, but if it turns into more, how do you see them attempting to replace him?
Yeah, that would be an interesting scenario there because wide receiver is probably the deepest position group on their roster. They've got 14 guys competing for what are probably only going to be, you know, five, maybe six spots. But a lot of those guys are young guys who really have not played a lot and who you probably wouldn't feel great about having to step in for your number one guy or at least backfilling on the bottom of the depth chart there. So, you know, I think that if in that scenario, if Doug Baldwin was going to be out, you know, they may have to look at the free agent market. You know, there's guys like, of course, Des Bryant is still available. I really don't think they'd want to go down that road. But there's other, you know, well-known veterans. Jeremy Maclin, Eric Decker are two names that come to mind And again, it would be a difficult situation because wide receiver is probably one of the least plug-and-play positions when you talk about having to learn the offense, having to learn the quarterback. So fortunately for them, it doesn't sound like it's going to come to that. Pete Carroll said, you know, probably only a couple weeks. Somebody that I spoke with, too, didn't seem to think that that Doug Baldwin was going to be out very long. And that's thankful because, you know, for them, because that would be a kind of a difficult situation with their number one receiver.
Question number two. All right, Brady, how do you see the Seahawks deploying their return men this year for punts and kicks, considering all these new rules that we're all anxiously awaiting to see employed here?
Yeah, I thought Brian Schneider, their special teams coach, had a pretty interesting and really solid explanation of this the other day. And if you can picture a kickoff return team, again, this is, as you mentioned, Bob, this is all about the new kickoff rules. And if you can picture a kickoff return team, in the past, you used to have maybe four or five guys, you know, within about 20 yards of the goal line under the old setup. Well, now, under the new rules, 8 of the 11 guys have to be within 15 yards of the ball. So that means only 3 guys can be back deep towards the goal line. You know, your 3, you know, one of them being your return guy, obviously. Now, what that's going to do, that's going to create a ton of space, a ton of empty space back towards the goal line. And that leaves, I think, the door open for teams to try, you know, those little pooch kicks or, you know, with the intention of trying to recover it just because there's so, you know, there's fewer players back there to field the ball. So when you've got fewer players back there, you're going to need guys who can field the ball and who can return it. And at the same time, you're going to want guys who can block, because if one of those two guys doesn't get the ball, you know, you're going to want them to be able to block. Otherwise, you know, they're just going to be, you're basically going to be trying to block 11 guys with 8. And so if you want a guy who can return it, you want a guy who's big enough to block it, well, that sounds like a big running back. And Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, two guys who are obviously adept at handling the ball. They're big enough to be able to give you something as a blocker. And those are the two names that Brian Schneider, the special teams coordinator, mentioned. So I would think that there's a good chance we'll see at least one, if not both of those guys, back there fielding kicks. Or back there, at least two to be able to field kicks along with Tyler Lockett this season.
Interesting. All right, question number three. As you look at this group of young players, Brady, some of them will see the field probably sooner than we think. Who's on that list?
The name that comes to mind first, Mike, is Trey Flowers, the rookie fifth-round pick. And, you know, there were two guys that they went into that draft thinking that they really have to have. One was Will Dissly, the tight end. They got the fourth round. And the other was Trey Flowers, the cornerback from Oklahoma State, who's converting from safety to cornerback. And, you know, from everything I've heard, everybody that I've talked to, and from what I've seen in practice myself, they are very thrilled with how he's making that transition. That's a pretty difficult transition when you talk about not only learning a new position, but having to learn, you know, a technique that the Seahawks play at cornerback that has proven to be pretty difficult for a lot of guys, especially, you know, veterans that come in here in the middle of their career. By all accounts, he's taken to it very well. There was one play that stood out yesterday in practice. He was lined up against Cyril Grayson. Cyril Grayson put a move on him at the line of scrimmage. He stuck with him, ran with him down the sideline. I think that was important because that's probably the receiver, the type of athlete that would give him the hardest time. You know, a big-bodied cornerback at 6'3", over 200 pounds. You know, and Cyril Grayson is a shifty, speedy receiver, a former track star. That's probably the type of guy who would give a big, tall cornerback like that the biggest problem. Of course, that was only one play in practice, so you don't read too much into that. But everything that I've heard is that they're thrilled with how, you know, how he's coming along in that transition. And I wouldn't be surprised if he competes for playing time at cornerback. You know, Byron Maxwell is the veteran, obviously the most experienced guy there. I think he's the leader in the clubhouse to start at right cornerback opposite Shaquille Griffin. But again, I would not be surprised if Trey Flowers finds his way in that spot at some point this season.
Good stuff. Brady Anderson, ESPN.com. Yeah, Flowers stands out. He looks great out there. He's really tall at the cornerback spot. Here's my idea. Tell me what you guys think. This is what you do, all right? You got to be creative on these things, Bob. So here's what you do. And if you really want, because Brady said, I was thinking as he was saying 11 on 8, and it really wouldn't be, it's 10 on 8 because of the kicker is never really part of the tackling. So why don't they teach a special teams tackler of some sort, a corner or safety or something like that, how to just kick kickoffs, not kick field goals or anything.
To pooch it.
Why don't you teach somebody like that, and then you would actually have an advantage of another player out there who could run down and tackle?
I think that may be.
How hard can it be to do kickoffs? Huh?
I probably harder than you're making it.
Oh, please. It's not that hard. Well, the kicker on my high school team was like our biggest kid. He was a big fat kid, and he kicked the ball down the field. Brian Small. He was the biggest guy on our team until he got hurt punching a goalpost for no reason at the beginning of warm-ups. Until then, he was the biggest guy on our team, and he was our kicker. He kicked off. He was great at it.
Come on, Brady.
You're telling
me
Nico Thorpe can't do it? Come on. Of course he can. All right. Thank you, Brady.
Who's the one guy you'd want to kick off?
I mean, look, first of all, none of them are bigger than Sebastian Janikowski. So, I mean, he looks like DJ Fluker out there. They're like, you confuse the two
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, but he's brittle right now. You don't want him trying to tackle
right.
anybody.
I want Nico Thorpe to do it and then race down the field. Or maybe Delano Hill. It seems like nobody wants him to play safety. So maybe he can kick off for you and run down and tackle people. All right. Thank you, Brady. We got to go.
You bet. I'll run that by Brian Schneider next time I see you.
All right. Thank you. Please do that. Brady Henderson, ESPN.com. See, Delano's not playing safety. You might as well have him do that. We're late. We need you guys on the phone. Can you guys do me a favor? Are you willing to call in without knowing the question? I've got a quiz, a rapid-fire quiz of a lot of different questions. All you got to have is an opinion. You don't have to know anything. You just have to
answer.
They've
got opinions. They can
all
do
you
got
to do is opine. 206-421-3776. Rapid-fire. We'll answer. You help next. I'm Brock and Salk.